This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that.
Yeah.
No hassle.
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Good morning, folks. Hope you're having a great morning. What a just another beautiful day here in the Crescent City. How fortunate are we? And if this weather is able to carry through the weekend, it will be one heck of a Mardi Gras celebration for sure. We've got a great lineup for you today. As always on Thursdays, we visit with Rafael Goyeneche in the 12 o'clock hour. He is the president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. We'll talk about the most recent sentencing of Todd Morrell. We'll talk about data from ankle monitors and how there have been some successes there. And we'll talk about some individual cases that we have begun to highlight over the past several shows, about some of them just kind of exposing the underbelly of the criminal justice system and where we see deficiencies in the way that we're handling some of these cases. At 11:30, we'll visit with Glade Bilby, president of the French Quarter Citizens Group, and he'll talk about, the neighborhood, the flavor of the neighborhood during the course of the Super Bowl. How did that go? Some of the same security measures that were implemented for the Super Bowl have been implemented for Mardi Gras, and there's now discussion about whether or not at least on a part-time basis, having Bourbon Street as a pedestrian mall for certain hours of each and every day. Obviously, there are a lot of challenges in trying to find a healthy balance between the residents that live in the French Quarter, the commercial operators in the French Quarter, and obviously managing tourism in the French Quarter as well. At 11 o'clock, U.S. Senator Bill Cassidy will join us. It seems as though we're beginning to see indications of a measles outbreak, and it tends to be moving across the country. Looks like it may be now south of the I-10, coming in from the west. What does that mean to us? And we'll talk about vaccines for measles and the history of vaccines for measles as well. Colin Arnold joins us at 10:30. He is the Director of Homeland Security and Emergency Preparedness for New Orleans. We'll talk about Mardi Gras safety rules, banned items, street closures, first aid stations, and some other common sense tips in an attempt to make your experience more enjoyable and a lot easier with some of the new rules. You know, we're creatures of habit. We kind of go to the same place every year to watch our parades, and we kind of take the same paths to get there as well. We have experienced success in getting to our place that we want to spend time watching the parades, but things are a little bit different this year. So that traditional path that you take may not be as fruitful for you. So we'll talk about these street closures so you will be aware of what's happening there. I was watching testimony before a U.S. Congressional Committee yesterday. A lot of it was focused on the activities of USAID, USAID, talking about what has gone on there with the approval process, running against certain databases, recipients of U.S. tax dollars, and the fact that the Biden administration had actually relaxed the rules. It was very interesting. They had some former USAID workers there, as well as some watchdog agencies testifying as to what they have seen over the past 4 years and what has been done. And it became evidently clear that the Biden administration did not really care much about the safety and security of the motherland at all. In fact, what they've uncovered is that they purposely and intentionally drew back or canceled some of the internal controls of USAID. So, for example, if there was a group that put in for a grant, they would run that group against the terrorist designation list, terrorist watch list, some other intelligence agencies, control databases to see whether or not any of these grants were going to what we would have designated as a terrorist organization or some other situation that made it problematic as it relates to the best interests of this country. They canceled that. They didn't do that at all. They just started giving the money away. So what happened? Over the years, we shouldn't be surprised. Same thing was done under the Obama administration as well. Shouldn't be surprised that we were given money, and it gets even worse. So you have a grantee, and then that grantee may turn around and give that money to a sub-grantee, and it goes on down the chain, and what you're finding is that we're giving money to any number of organizations that are either directly or indirectly related to terrorist organizations out there who have not worked in the best interests of the United States of America. Now, I don't know about you, but I think most people in this country, with common sense anyway, would say, well, that doesn't make any sense. Why are we doing this? Why would we give money to folks that hate us? Why would we give money to folks that want to see us fail? Why would we give money to folks who want to commit harm on U.S. citizens? Great questions. I'm not sure that they have great answers. In fact, one USAID individual tried to defend it by saying, well, these people have needs too. Not my problem, would be my response. If they're not in step with what we're trying to accomplish in the United States, why should we be giving them, the taxpayers' hard-earned money, to engage in activities that are not in the best interest of this country? It seems to me that ought to be a pretty simple thing to grasp hold of, to get your head around, right? But for some, it's obviously not. Whatever means it takes to get to the ends that they desire. And it's almost as if we're helping people, it doesn't matter that they hate us. It doesn't matter that they're willing to take arms against us. It doesn't matter that they're willing to pass information along to individuals to do harm to this country as well. None of that matters. And meanwhile, we just keep giving out millions and millions and even billions of dollars over many, many years to these organizations that continue to do this over and over and over again. That's the beauty of what we're seeing as a byproduct of DOGE. Now, you know, look, the execution of DOGE has not been one that I would give an A-plus to. I kind of understand what they're trying to go after. I know that it's a balancing act against federal civil service, this bureaucracy that can circle the wagons and make it really difficult for one to penetrate these organizations, to gain a better understanding of how they work operationally, who's responsible for what, who are the decision makers. And for a long time, Congress has been frustrated by not being able to get any information about how we end up with situations, as has been reported out here recently and has been testified to before Congress. So I get the frustration. And maybe that's enough to justify the manner in which they're going about doing this, is they got to move quick, they've got to move fast, because if not, the doors will start to shut, the misdirection will start to take place, evasion, deflection, all of that goes on by the bureaucracy, and you get stuck on stuck. And once you fall into that quagmire, sometimes it becomes very, very difficult to get out. And I guess what's the situation that might be the most emblematic of that is that you had watchdog agencies that have made FOIA requests of USAID that's been sitting out there 2 to 3 years with their persistent refusal without a legal leg to stand on to not provide the information. Well, I don't know about you, but in my former life, we would call that a red flag. And you would want to go look at that, because obviously there's something there that's either embarrassing, illegal, unethical, or otherwise. They don't want to bring forward the information of money that's being passed to certain organizations in the form of a grant. If it was truly altruistic and there wasn't going to be a situation one way or the other, one would think that you would be proud to reveal that information. That you're very efficient in the manner in which you're putting money out there that's changing people's lives around the country. But not this bureaucracy. This bureaucracy takes a different approach. How dare you question any of what they're doing? You don't know better. And that's where we run, you know, this the old adage, the devil's in the details, and you begin to find out what it is that's actually being funded and whether or not that should even be within the scope of this agency. And if there's not an ROI that's quantifiable and identifiable, a return on investment for the United States, we should not be there. Shouldn't happen. We have limited dollars. The capacity of our citizens is only so much. We're running a $36 trillion deficit, and we think it's okay to justify certain expenditures by saying, well, it's only $1,000. Got $1,000 here, $1,000 there, $1,000 everywhere. It doesn't make it right that it's just an, what some people might say is an inconsequential amount of money. The issue is bigger than that. The issue is truly about scope. Where should we be and where should we not be? And if we choose to be somewhere, we should be there for good reason. And we ought to be able to connect the dots as to why we're actually there. And we ought to be able to quantify what it actually means. Is it in furtherance of an interest that we have in a particular area or region of the world or otherwise? If not, we don't need to be there. Especially in countries that we would not refer to as allies of the United States. We're not sure what they are. They run contrary to all principles of a democracy. Why would we be there? For what reason? And I say this with the backdrop, and I remind folks all the time that we have 40-something million people that live below the federally identified poverty level in this country. And there's so much more that we could do on so many different fronts if we take a learned approach to how we address some of these issues. And we will have an identifiable return on our investment that will be smart. And we're always trying to figure out where to extract a dollar from here, there, or otherwise. Well, it seems to me there's a lot of dollars that we can extract right there at USAID. And I dare say there's going to be a lot of dollars that we could extract out of any of these organizations. If we begin to quantify scope, where do we want government to be on these issues? Do we want them in that silo? Do we want them in this silo? Do they need to be in this silo? I think one of the byproducts of a full-time Congress is that they got too much time on their hands. Just read some of these crazy, silly bills that are introduced by both sides of the aisle. It is bipartisan. For the sake of perpetuating their political career, perpetuating an ideology, trying to be relevant on the back of your wallet. And we're dealing with all of this cuckoo world sometimes. And I don't know about you, but I look at some of these bills and say, why is this a good idea? Why are we even worried about this? Is there a pressing issue? Is there a crisis? Is there exigency? No. What you're going to find is more often than not, folks just trying to make a name for themselves. You're financing it. No big deal for them. They don't care. Right? That bottomless money pit, U.S. taxpayers, you got fat wallets. We'll just spend. We'll spend more. We'll throw some bills out there. Put a lot of people studying something that's so inconsequential that it doesn't even matter. That's why you see us financing comic books about LGBTQ communities in a country that probably 60% of this country doesn't even know what that country is. Why would we do that? Why would we perpetuate a lifestyle? Are there not basic necessities that a lot of these countries need? We should be asking these questions of our leaders. And that all comes to scope. Where are we? What are we willing to do, and why? And maybe had we done this 30, 40 years ago, we wouldn't have a $36 trillion deficit that we're facing today. We'll be right back, 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code FLEX at checkout. That's harrys.com, code FLEX. Enjoy!
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Street Easy knows former New Yorkers never stop talking about how much they miss living in NYC.
Life used to feel like a movie, but since we left and bought a house, it's like living in a DIY home repair video.
When it's time to buy, let Street Easy connect you with the right agent you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
Well, folks, the big weekend is upon us, obviously, with Mardi Gras joining us. Colin Arnold, Director of Homeland Security and Emergency Preparedness for the City of New Orleans. Colin, welcome to the show.
Hey, Sheriff. Thank you.
Colin, we have a couple of weekends under our belt. All things considered, how did it go?
Pretty smooth. We're happy with the way things are going. The crowds have been good. The weather has been good. We had one weather decision we had to make over the weekend, and I think over last week, and it ended up being the right one. So, it's unfortunate anytime you have to schedule a parade because there's a lot of things that go with that. There are people that come into town to ride that it's unexpected. Sometimes you have to, make changes to whether or not there's going to be elements and marching bands and things like that. But really it's about public safety, about keeping the public safe, the riders safe, keeping our police officers safe. And that's kind of the, that's our goal.
So Colin, I want to talk a little bit about what's changed. We are creatures of habit, right? We typically go and park ourselves at the same place on the same street around the same time every year to view parades. And we also, adding to that, we take the same route to get there. Well, that route may not be the best route any longer. And where you parked, a lot of folks had an opportunity to park in the first block off of St. Charles Avenue, new either on the lakeside or the riverside of that. What has changed on the St. Let's start with the St. Charles Avenue corridor that would be of concern or disruption to what people normally do.
No, it's an excellent point. And I mean, what we've tried to do, I think, as a team with both, the New Orleans Police Department and Louisiana State Police and DOTD and our Public Works Department all kind of putting heads together was, just create some layers or the ability to kind of traffic calming measures that would bring the ability of people to, get onto St. Charles Avenue and speed up, during the parades, kind of take that avenue away. And then what that also would do is allow with the enhanced personnel that we have out there, both from, there's federal authorities out there, and you've also got sheriffs and police departments from across the state that come in and for the third year in a row that have helped, able to be back there behind the route on St. Charles and keeping an eye on, any potential threat that might be coming from the vehicle side. And also, part of this was to be able to look at what people were bringing. Coolers obviously is a big part of Mardi Gras, and we're not going to get rid of those, but just kind of keeping an eye on everything and being able to respond more quickly. I don't think, other than maybe a little bit of headache with the serpentine and being able to get there as quickly as you wanted, hopefully people use the first weekend to kind of adapt to that. And then, but now I think, getting there it might take a little longer. You might find a little bit of competition for some of your favorite parking spots, but really, I'm not seeing too much of a difference.
So I know early onset there was some discussion about barricading one block off of St. Charles Avenue on both the river and lakeside. Was that executed or no?
No, I mean, we just, we spoke with the council, we spoke with residents. We did a lot of work with, there were several things that were considered. And ultimately, and I remember talking with you weeks ago, kind of in that interim period between the January 1st attack and when we were getting ready for Super Bowl. And we talked about how much do we have to change what we do for Mardi Gras? And in the, at the end of the day, how much are we willing to change? And I think that was, closing off the non-parading side of St. Charles Avenue and cutting off the access for the people trying to get to the parades. And I think very importantly for the businesses and the residents trying to get to their homes for all of those hours of the days of parading, is just, it was a bridge too far. And we heard that pretty loud and clear. And so that was why the determination was made to go with the route that we did, which is, traffic calming and just an enhanced, I'm sure people have seen an enhanced presence behind the route on those, on St. Charles, both a lot more lighting, a lot more public safety vehicles during the parades, and just a more physical enhanced presence there.
Right. So let's talk about street closures. Are there any street closures that are we will experience this weekend that we've not experienced thus far, or that we've not experienced in previous Mardi Gras seasons?
Not really. What I would say is that we're going to, for Endymion, I would say that getting around on Canal on the off side of the route is always a challenge, and I think we're going to double down on our crossovers that we use for public safety. The main one being Galvez and then Broad as well. And so, trying to get around those areas, I just highly recommend that people really do not try and drive around Canal in particular. On Saturday, I think it's going to be a mess just with the people that are going to be out there. But it's like that every year. So, there will be some other, enhanced presence out there for Endymion as well. And so, but generally speaking, other road closures, not so much. Not really.
There's also been a lot of talk, unattended coolers is one thing that's been chatted about, barbecue pits, other things that are out there. What has been the experience in the first two weekends? Had there had to been any interaction or have the officers out on the parade route had to take any action relative to saying?
There have been some actions taken here and there, and I know that there was somewhat of a, possibly what could be construed as a mixed message sent out before the before parade started about the enforcement of such things. I will just say this, we appreciate the work we've done with the city council on coming up with a lot of the, some of the rules and regulations that we have looked to do, both, as a quality of life issue, but also I think more importantly, people need to understand having large tanks of propane out on a parade route around a bunch of people is not a good thing for accidents and intentional types of acts. So, I mean, it is more than a quality of life issue. It is a safety issue overall. And so, while we have certain things that we really want to concentrate on, which is unattended, unattended coolers, things that look unattended, as far as people leaving them, and then departing the area. We want to focus on those types of things. We want to focus on drones. We want to obviously focus on vehicles and how they interact with pedestrians. We still really want the public to keep in mind that there's a reason why we ask not to bring certain things out to the parade. And yes, it's for the enjoyment of others. If somebody can't see around a tent, that's one thing. But that also creates a public safety issue when you cannot see what's going on inside a tent, and you don't know what those people are doing inside. So it's a balance. But overall, the public has been really good. We, the first couple days are always you know, a little challenging with people setting up early. And that's another issue that tends to pop up over this weekend with just people are excited. They want to get set up. But, you know, we still ask that people honor that time that we have before bringing all of those things out to the parade route.
I know we don't talk about this much, but we used to in the past because it used to be our big, I guess, you know, I say our when I was in law enforcement in Jefferson and helping in Orleans as well. Bottles, still not appropriate on a parade route, right?
Yeah, and glass containers in general are just, you know, it's they're inconvenient. I will say that there are opportunities this year. This is the I believe the third year of the Recycle That program, where there will be a lot of locations around the parade route to recycle plastics, glass, aluminum, and the like. That's both beads and also trash. But I think the best thing to do with glass is it becomes a problem if you know, with intoxication. It also just becomes a problem when it breaks and is in the street and becomes a safety issue. You got to remember, there's a lot of our young people are out there in these bands, in marching bands, and they're out in the street. Any type of debris like that that ends up in the street can pose a problem for them. And it's just a wiser move to not bring it at all.
Yeah. Any other things that you think? I know that you guys have deployed a number of first aid stations. Do you happen to have the locations of where those are?
Yeah, the first aid stations uptown are at all the major crossover intersections. You know, you have one at St. Charles and Napoleon, and then you've got one at Louisiana. You've got one at at the Circle, and then also at Poydras, and then up and down Canal Street. Then we'll also have those first aid stations on Saturday, in particular on the Mid-City route, extending all the way from, I want to say it's at Hennessy and Orleans, and then around that corner there's another one on Carrollton at coming towards Canal Boulevard, and then there's a few of them up and down Canal Street at the major intersections, Broad, Galvez, and then down right around St. Charles Avenue. And those are great because they've got actual medical personnel from the LCMC system there. We've got volunteers from the Red Cross. We've got some of our Medical Reserve Corps and NOLA Ready volunteers. And that's just something that I'm glad you brought up. It's a really good pressure relief valve for our EMS system, because what would happen is, you know, you get EMS personnel that are already overloaded, a lot of moving call to call. And this is an opportunity if somebody, you know, gets a cut, you know, speaking of glass, gets a cut, is having a tough time for one reason or another, maybe, you know, a little bit, heat related, cold related issues, they can go to that first aid station, and that takes the burden off of having to call for necessarily an ambulance for that person. It also gives a good triage that if somebody does need to get there, we've got very quick contact with ambulances that are right in the area near where those first aid stations are located.
One of the other harrowing things of being out on a parade route is sometimes you lose your children. What's your best advice in that happenstance?
Yeah, same thing as the first aid stations, and actually they're usually co-located. Or very nearby. We have the NOPD runs lost child, reunification kind of posts where you can bring a lost child. They'll have NOPD personnel there. It's usually the same group that does it every year, and they love being able to work with the kids and finding their folks. I'm gonna be honest. A lot of times, the kid is found or reunited with their parent or their guardian before they even make that post. Typically, yeah. You know, with radios, you can get out there very quickly, and most parents are very quick to turn around and realize their kid's gone, and and find them real quickly. But they are there. We've never lost one yet as far as a long-term type situation. But a lot of these things, right. And again, bringing it up with the first aid stations, with public restrooms, with the lost child stations, you can go to routewise.nola.com, and that is the city's parade tracker, and we have all those locations and information graphically displayed on a map that you can actually find these locations in the palm of your hand.
Would you spell that out, Colin, for me, please?
Sure. It's Routewise, R-O-U-T-E-W-I-S-E, routewise.nola.gov.
Okay.
And then while I'm at it, this is our first year that we have debuted the NOLA Ready app. It's available in both Apple and Android stores. It's free. It has not only the parade tracker that we have that the city produces, but also for disasters and what have you, and general preparedness, it has a dashboard with all of the different types of information that we use when we're looking at the weather, when we're looking at the utilities, sewage and water board. It's all right there in one easy application. So if you go into the App Store, search for NOLA Ready app, you can download that for free and have all of that information right in the palm of your hand as well.
So would that all be the same protocol, Colin, for a missing parent? I'm just kidding. It's a joke. That seems to be a bigger challenge at Mardi Gras.
That can go a couple of different ways.
Just trying to lighten it up a little bit, because
my experience
dictates that that was always a bigger problem than the children with the parents.
Yeah, the kids know what they're doing.
Yeah, exactly. Final thoughts?
No, just everybody have a great time. We've been through a lot in the first 2 months of this year. It seems like a year already, but we're out there. We're doing everything that we can to keep people safe, but what I've also seen is that the public is responding in kind and making good decisions, and that's a huge part and a huge help to what we're trying to get accomplished with Mardi Gras.
Yeah, I mean, one of the resounding things that I hear every day that people have gone to parades is that I've seen more police than I've ever seen before at Mardi Gras,
sure.
And I think that brings about a sense of calm, right? And those that come to a particular area with malintent, they recognize this may not be where I want to be.
Yeah, it might be time to move on.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
Well, thank you so much for spending some time with us this morning. We truly appreciate it. And best of luck in this final weekend. Bring them on home.
Thanks. Happy Mardi Gras.
Same to you. Colin Arnold, Director of Homeland Security and Emergency Preparedness for the City of New Orleans. We will be right back, folks. Stay with us. You know, I love my listening audience because they are quick on the uptake, and they always figure out something in order to make things work. And so I got a couple of recommendations here. One was so apparent, I can't even believe I didn't think of it myself, but put an AirTag in your kid's pocket. Problem solved, right? And obviously those kids that have a phone, you just want to make sure that you have the ability to track their phone. So that's always a good thing as well. Got a lot of questions about wrecks. So it looks like even with the traffic barriers, I think wrecks is still going to run their traditional route. And swapping over to the neutral ground side for their customary toast, despite these new security barriers that are set up on St. Charles Avenue. And also they will be toasting the court at Pascal Manalis on Napoleon Avenue. None of that is really, those modifications have all been about the ability to move the court to other functions during the day and then in preparation for the ball that evening. Whether or not Rex is on time or otherwise is still being determined by Zulu and whether or not Zulu's on time. So we've had a number of texts about that, but that's pretty much determined by the first parade that's out there. And there is an area where, and I forgot where it is exactly, where Rex has to wait till the end of the Zulu parade in order to proceed further down their parade route. They try to create a little separation there as they make their way to Gallier Hall. So they will not be toasting the court over at the Intercontinental Hotel as they traditionally have done. So they moved it earlier on in the route so that the court can move on to the other activities that they have in the afternoon. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. Folks, when we come back after the top of the hour news break, we'll visit with U.S. Senator Bill Cassidy. We'll be talking about measles as it moves its way across the country and the availability of vaccines. We'll also visit with Glade Bilby, president of French Quarter Citizens Group. We'll talk about the security measures that were implemented for the Super Bowl, as well as the continuation of same from Mardi Gras and how that's worked from their perspective in the quarter. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us.
Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Reese Crosby.
If you enjoy football, football,
be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys. New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday.
Subscribe on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.